Here we go with Terry Savage. She joins us on Wednesdays at this time, and we'll be here for most of the hour. So if you've got a question or a comment, if there's something you want Terry to help solve for you, she has her cloudy crystal ball with her today. I mean, I'm going to ask you, like, so are stocks good or are stocks bad? Is oil going to stay high or is it going to go down? How are you, Terry?
Oh, well, you're right. My crystal ball is cloudy, but let's start with the second one you mentioned. Oil prices on the world market, the West Texas, European market is different. But even the global market that we price here in the U.S. is now over $109 a barrel.
Wow.
We have never seen that. Well, for a long time, actually, we did see it a few years back. But I want to translate that into a market that every single one of us just about watches. Now, some people can't tell you where the Dow is within 15,000 points, but how about gasoline prices? So I checked, and this you can check too. I used the AAA website for Chicago, for Illinois. The current, and I'll use regular. Why do I use premium? Because I think my car likes it. I'm going to switch immediately.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's use regular, but I'll mention premium because my eyes just rolled over when I went to that column. The current average price of a gallon of gas is $3.926. $3.92. I'll round off. A year ago, the average price was $2.89. So we're nearly a dollar a gallon higher. And I think the real squeeze is coming in premium because $4.64.8, I'll call it $4.65 for premium. And a year ago, it was $3.60. So we're well over a dollar higher. And if you have to, I have to ask my son again, why is it I'm using premium? So I predict, and this is not a cloudy prediction, I think this is an easy one, that even for regular, which is currently $3.92, we're going to see, if we don't see $5, we're going to see $4.99.9. a gallon. The idea of paying close to $5 a gallon for gas gives you an idea. Every one of us knows how that impacts your own budget, what else you can spend money on, i.e. going out to dinner, etc. It impacts the cost of trucking fruit, you know, food across the country, produce that's all trucked fresh. If that really happens, and it's entirely possible that it could, we're going to see a different story this summer. By the way, the highest ever, where did I find it? Highest ever that gas prices were for regular in Illinois was on May 5th, 2011. The start of the summer driving season, regular was $4.31. So it's $3.92 now. And oil prices, crude oil was higher then, but that was a global financial situation. This is ongoing, and we have not really even enacted sanctions on Russian exports of oil, because all the Western countries from Germany to the U.S., and the president said it last night, really didn't want to make, you know, things harder on their own people, especially we have an election in the United States, you know, this year. So this is without even going on to the toughest sanctions, which would be to tell Russia they couldn't sell abroad. Of course they would sell abroad. They would sell to China, which wouldn't buy so much from Saudis. So it's not as if we could actually squeeze the last drop of oil out of the system by cutting them out of the markets. But the fact is, this is just on disruptions and substitutions, and the fact that the U.S. and Western Europe have disinvested in drilling and fracking, and I don't want to get into that as a social thing. Just as oil prices are soaring, we get a big report out of the UN yesterday, it was yesterday, about how we're at the brink of the end of the world in terms of our climate. So these are tough choices.
Yeah.
So forget about the stock market for a moment. This is where the market's going to impact you most as current gasoline prices go up.
I drove a BMW for a while, and it required, it said, recommended was the 92 instead of the 89, you know, mm-hmm. the premium gas. And a friend of mine said, so you're a gas snob. I've never heard that phrase, a gas snob. She said, she said, you don't, if that makes you feel better because you got a fancy car, now you're going to buy the fancy gas, go ahead. But you do not need to buy the fancy gas to put in your fancy car. Buy the regular and you'll be fine. I don't think that's going to clog your carburetor or whatever.
The thing is, I did this on my blog before I even had my blog. I wrote something on this or mentioned it on air once. And I got it back and forth with a bunch of readers who told me that mid-grade was okay. And then I put it in my car, and then I went to accelerate getting on the expressway.
And
my car said, I don't feel like it. I don't quite feel like it. So okay. Maybe you have to change your driving habits. But I for sure am going to change the grade of gasoline from premium to mid-grade.
It's 12:15. That's Terry Savage. She'll answer questions for you, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. We'll pick up our phone lines and answer your questions in a minute. Lots of calls for you, Terry. Anything else you want to get to first?
Yeah, let's just make a point about the stock market. Right now, this morning, all morning, Fed Chairman Powell has been testifying. He's been very calm and measured. He says, yep, we got to raise rates, but all that fear of maybe they'll do a half a point. He said, no, it's going to be a quarter of a point unless something very unusual happens. We're still going to raise rates. That gave the bulls in the market some hope that there wasn't going to be a huge increase in rates. The stock market is up now, 637. But you know inflation squeezes profits of companies as they have to pay higher wages to attract employees. So the question is, what is the outlook for the stock market down the road when rates do go up? What about all the uncertainties of the Ukraine? We know, as I mentioned about gas, we're going to have more inflation. And the most bullish thing about the stock market, well, two possible bullish things. We're just dancing around here up and down. We're up 637 today. We were down yesterday. There are two bullish things that you could say about the stock market. Number one, there's still a lot of money floating around, money that the Fed has put in and has not yet started sucking out. So if you're worried about inflation, you go to stocks because over the long run, they have that track record of always beating inflation over every 20-year period. That is one bullish thing. And the next possible bullish thing that could come along is Putin comes to his senses. There's some kind of a deal, and Ukraine isn't too devastated before that happens, in which case that would be another trigger for the market to be higher. Over the long run, I just want to say this. I have to say this every time. Keep putting your $300 a paycheck in automatically in the equity fund or the equity index, S&P fund, whatever it is. But please don't try and trade these markets because these are very volatile, and not only volatile up and down, but up and down to extremes that we haven't seen in the past.
Yeah, it's tempting to think that way if you're some sort of day trader.
Exactly.
I guess if you're some sort of day trader, this is what you do. But for the rest of us, you go, oh, shoot, were I that kind of person, I missed an opportunity, and you don't want me to play that game, do you?
Exactly. I don't want most of the people who listen to us and all of you who are saying, well, that doesn't apply to me. Go right ahead. There was just a report released that talked about how the cost of trading are so impactful on your overall returns over the long run that even if you were a successful trader, the costs put you behind the eight ball compared to just being there, being the market. Over the long run, you'll do fine. But that's okay. If it's your hobby, you go ahead and do it. I'm talking about people are thinking, wait a minute, I'm 63, I want to retire. The market's up, now it's down, now it's up again. What do I do? Right now, on a day like today, when it's up, you say, all right, am I 96% in the stock market? I don't think I want to be there. You never look back. You take some out, you put in short, very short-term bonds, 2 years or less, or in cash, and say, this will let me sleep at night so I can hold on to the rest of my portfolio. I know that works. It's worked for me.
Here come your phone calls for Terry
okay.
Savage. We start with Mike. You're on WGN Radio. Mike, what can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Hey, Terry, you know, you talked about the gas prices increasing, but I've just noticed that the trend with electric vehicles, what's really driving that? Is that the market driving that? Is it a supply and demand issue? Or are the oil companies trying to take advantage before electric vehicles really take hold?
Well, electric vehicles over the long run provide some opportunity to be less dependent, obviously, on oil. But we're living in the short run. You're going to fill up your tank every week or maybe twice a week, depending on how much you drive. And I think that's just a function of, number one, world prices. And we all know that when they get a chance to widen their margins, the refiners do so, and they pass that on to the wholesalers to the gas stations who then post their prices. There's every incentive now, given higher inflation, to maximize the price at the pump. And people will pay that because we have to drive. It feeds into everything. So there's no nefarious thing here. Yeah, if 40% of our fleet being commercial vehicles as well as regular passenger cars, if that were electric now, we'd have a different story with gas prices. But it's not the case.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I'm going to go from you to Kathy next. You're on WGN. Kathy, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi, Terry. I have very few small investments accounts that have beneficiaries assigned. I have a very moderately priced townhouse, no real valuables, a couple things stated in the will. Can I just do a living trust just for the house that won't affect my bank accounts?
Well, a living trust doesn't affect anything unless you retitle the name of the house or the account in the name of the revocable living trust. It shouldn't cost that much. I don't know when you last did your will, but it doesn't cost very much. The difference is very minimal between a will and a revocable living trust. But my real question is, who do you want to be, number one, do you know who you want to be the person who inherits your house? Do you know that?
I do.
And do you know the name of the person that you want to administer your estate, whether it's a living trust or a will, who you've named?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So if you haven't updated your will in a while, just create a revocable living trust. It costs nothing to change the title of your house. Even if you have a mortgage, they give you two paragraphs from your living trust document that says you are the current trustee and your successor trustee is your daughter, your son, your friend. And give that to the bank, the mortgage company that holds it. Then, if something happened to you, you were in a coma, God forbid, all those horrible things that could happen, your successor trustee wouldn't have to go to court. They could handle your checking account if you put the checking account in the name of your trust, or your maybe not your everyday checking, but your money market account should be in the name of your revocable living trust. So that person you've named can take over before you die and make sure things are done the way you want them.
Kathy, good luck. We're going from you to Donna next. You're on WGN with Terry Savage. Donna.
Hi, Terry. I'm calling. We have a inherited condo that we were thinking of selling. We are elderly. We have our own home, but we have a condo also. We're wondering what the capital gains tax on that would be.
How long ago did you inherit the condo?
Over 20 years ago.
Oh, 20 years ago. Well, I assume
it's
you inherited this. Oh, and you've been
renting it.
Okay. Yeah. So now, have you taken any depreciation? Have you reported the rent as income?
No.
Yeah, no. Okay. So probably the basis for this property, if you sell it, will be the value 20 years ago in 2020. So if the condo is today worth $382,000, but you go back and look at real estate prices for two-bedroom condos on this neighborhood, it was only $276,000. You probably got, you have a capital gain. It's not your residence, so you don't get that $250,000 exclusion. If you paid to paint it or you paid a special assessment on the building, that will raise your cost basis. But you're going to have to estimate your cost basis. Then you're going to take your sales price, subtract the cost basis, including any improvements, and that will be a long-term capital gain, which will be taxed at lower rates. However, it will increase your income, and it could impact the cost of Medicare Part B.
That's not counted as income, though? That's not counted
as... It's a capital gain.
Yeah, but the income tax rate. What's the capital gains rate?
Well, the capital gains rate will be probably about 20%, half of the maximum. Your capital gains rate is based on your ordinary income tax rate. So it'll be lower. But what I'm saying to you is it will be considered part of your income for the year, and it could impact what you're going to pay for Medicare Part B next year. So what I'm going to suggest is it might not be worth selling it. And you might, unless you really need the cash, because you might have not only the taxes to pay, but it might increase your Medicare Part B premiums. I'm guessing you're in that realm. So I would suggest you go to a CPA, give him or her the details, and say, tell me, number one, what my taxes will be on this. That's probably not a big deal. But will it put me in a higher bracket, which could impact Medicare Part B?
As always, lots of calls, lots of texts. Terry, you want to jump back in?
Just in case Donna hasn't hung up, and I sort of hedged when you said, well, what would her tax rate be? And I said, well, that depends on her income. Let me point this out. Capital gains taxes are about half, of your ordinary income tax rate. If you're single, you don't pay any capital gains in 2022. This changes every year. If you have income below $41,675. If you're married, and you fall into the range between $41,675 and $459, if you're single, then you pay 15% capital gains tax rate. So it wasn't easy for me to give you an answer, but probably they either won't pay capital gains or might fall into that 15% bracket. But again, that's added to your income. You know what I noticed, though? If you're single and you're selling your junk on eBay and you can prove you had it a long time, even if you sold grandma's antique silver or something and someone said it was worth more, you wouldn't pay capital gains tax on that anyway, because if your income's below about $42,000.
You also described the cost basis for something. Who determines that? Do you do your own assessment?
Well, you know, I've always wondered here is something. I've talked many times about how I keep records of everything. Fortunate enough to have a huge basement, and there's a little box for every year of my life. But in a separate box, things like if you own stocks, for example, and if you've held them a long time, I've owned some before my current brokerage firms, and you need to keep the cost basis of your stocks, so when you sell them. Same thing with your house or any real estate, because people keep their houses for 35, 40 years. Some people do. And in that time, you redid the kitchen, you remodeled the bathroom, you added a bedroom or something like that. If you bought it in 1973 for $42,000 and today it's worth $450,000, all those expenses that were not just transitory, to use a Powell word, but were actual capital expenditures to improve the property, mm-hmm. those increase your tax base from that original 40-something thousand.
They increase it. Aren't deductions. Those are add-ons?
No, those add on to the cost of your house. So my house cost me $43,000 in 1973. I spent $10,000 remodeling in 1982.
Yeah.
Now my cost basis is $53,000. Then we put in the new bathroom or the new kitchen. That was another $7,000. So now my cost basis is $60,000.
So those are good things.
It's a good thing. When you sell your own home, you have a $250,000 exclusion of capital gains. If you're married, it's $500,000.
Do people have that kind of record keeping? I don't know where the title to my car is. I mean,
yeah, but you're not going to. When you sell your car, it's going.
You know what I mean?
That's not going to matter.
But I mean, people then say, "Well, we did all this. They're going to guesstimate what those costs are."
Well, and if the IRS comes back, I mean, I did a major remodel on my house, and when was it? 1992. I still have the file folder.
I don't.
With all the things that went into that, because I still own it, you know, and that would be of course, the property's gone up, but I also put money into it. I want to make sure I have that. And everybody should know to do that. There's a generation today that thinks paper, let's throw it away. I don't know what the IRS will be like when they sell 20 years later.
224 says, John, in the current economic climate, does Terry still recommend I-bonds?
Yeah, I-bonds carry that new higher rate. You can go to terrysavage.com and take a look at the article that I posted on I-bonds. And given the way inflation is going, when the readjusts in May, which is coming quickly, they adjusted in November, it looks like they will continue to pay a high rate of interest based on inflation. So, sure. But remember, you're going to hold those. They currently yield 7.12% for this 6 months.
Man.
Looks like they'll yield about that starting in May, unless something changes, maybe even more. But you want to hold them for 5 years to get the full benefit of the interest. So this is not for all the pennies you have saved for an emergency when the car breaks down.
Tony's on WGN Radio with Terry Savage. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi, John.
Hey.
I guess what we're talking about is the fact that I listen to your show every day, and I listen to all of this about electric cars and this and that and whatever. But I'm a 42-year journeyman mechanic, and I can honestly tell you this: people are starting to get agitated about this electric car thing. Okay. Because first off, America's never going to run on all electric cars. That's the first thing. And Joe Biden's speech last night, he said they're going to install 500,000 charging stations by 2030.
Yeah.
Let me just say this. There's probably 500,000 gas stations in Illinois. 500,000 charging stations really aren't going to do a whole lot of good, okay, when you talk about billions of cars that we have in this country. And the other problem is that, well, I'd like to know why we still are buying Russian oil when we have oil right here.
Why are you against electric cars, though? I mean, so if electric cars or vehicles become more common, they'll still need repair. They'll still need journeyman electric car repair guys, right?
Well, they'll have to be more schooling for that. And also, I can tell you that my son-in-law is a fireman, and he said that there's really a big problem when these things get into bad accidents, because if you see how they're built, they have huge electronic cables that feed all this, okay? And the battery, I mean, that thing is pretty potent. If you ever seen what would happen on a regular car battery, you know, if you accidentally cross, you know, the positive and negative, it will melt a wrench, okay? So if you can imagine
what
would happen.
What can I interrupt for a second? This is a pretty doomsday scenario. Let me just do a quick fact check. There are about 150,000 gas stations in the United States. Not 500,000 in Illinois, 150,000 in the United States. So, unlike a gas station, which requires a lot of infrastructure to put in a charging station in your garage or anywhere else, is not quite the kind of magnitude of the capital expenditure. I don't know that we'll ever get to 100% electric. We're moving quickly in that direction. Our major automobile companies are moving in that direction. We have policies that incent people to buy electric cars. In your lifetime, you don't have to worry about being employed. But if you had a son who said, Dad, I want to be a mechanic like you, you should send him to IIT or someplace where he's going to learn the electronics. I know that all the farmers who plowed with mules said, there's nothing like a good mule. Okay, and along came International Harvester. And, you know, now mules are very nice animals, I know, but they're not ubiquitous in farming. And the same thing will happen probably after your lifetime and mine are over. Our children or grandchildren will be driving electric cars, and there'll be an infrastructure. No reason to get upset. It will make us less dependent on countries like Russia, and it will make us less dangerous to our environment. So you're going to be fine. And if you have a child who wants to be a mechanic, that child's going to need some advanced computer technology and electronics technology, as well as oil and gas in Greece.
That sounds like that's all the time we got. It's 12:44 on WGN. Tony, I appreciate your call. I understand your ire. That's Terry's answer, and I think her answer makes pretty good sense, too. Terry, why don't you visit with us again next Wednesday?
Absolutely. Always look forward to it.
You can always check her writing out at terrysavage.com as we check out more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The largest private employer in the Chicago area is now Amazon, surpassing advocate Aurora Health. Cranes reports the new designation is based on research from MWPVL International. Amazon employs 27,000 workers in the metro area at 49 facilities. 36 of those locations have been built since 2015. 1,000 of those workers are employed at Amazon's tech hub downtown. The figure also includes workers at Whole Foods stores. Your sweet tooth is going to love this news. Candy retailer It's Sugar is opening a store on North Michigan Avenue. Florida-based chain is opening a store in the space being vacated by the Disney store at 717 North Michigan. It's Sugar will take over all 11,400 square feet of the space there. The company already has stores at Navy Pier, Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, and Gurnee Mills in Gurnee. Cranes reports the self-described candy emporium carries both conventional and novelty products, including 5-pound gummy bears. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Well, if you don't have a fear of cheese, which actually I just learned about today, John, thanks to you. I looked it up. It's called turophobia.
Yeah.
Turophobia. Well, if you don't have that and you actually love cheese, then this is probably like heaven.
The World Championship Cheese Contest is happening this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday up in Madison.
And Grace Atherton of the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association says this contest, held every other year going back to 1957, is a big deal.
Nearly 3,000 entries by cheesemakers from 29 countries. And we've also got a great U.S. showing with entries coming this year from 33 states. States.
And whether it's big processors or mom and pops, they all get the attention of 53 judges who taste, sniff, and eyeball cheese, yogurt, butter, and dried products like whey. And for the judges, it's a full sensory experience.
They're smelling, they're tasting, they're touching, they're looking at appearance and outside texture and all of those things.
Do they get to cleanse their palates after each one?
They do. They are provided with water and apples, crackers, things like that to kind of cleanse in between and make sure they're not getting any leftover flavors in there.
Yeah, the judges offer notes on each entry.
To let them know, you know, you could tweak this part of your process and maybe make it a little less acidic or a little more salty or have a little more body or change the texture.
There are 141 classes of entries, and this year the most notable new class is
cheese curds, making their official debut at the contest this year.
And is squeak one of the criteria for judges?
Yep. The official word is that squeak would fall into the categories of body or texture.
Anything unusual in the cheese category?
We have at least one yak's milk entry. I believe it's a monastery in Nepal where they actually make the cheese.
The judging is typically a spectator sport, but not this year because of COVID.
However, we are live streaming the announcement of the 2022 world champion on Thursday at 2 o'clock on our website.
Which is?
It is worldchampioncheese.org.
From the farm to your belly, well, this is dairy-related. It's National Banana Cream Pie Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Dave Irwin joins us, the founder and CEO of Polaris.io. Dave, you're on WGN. How are you today?
Great. Thanks, John.
Tell us what your business is. I read about it, but tell us the niche in the market you found.
Well, at Polaris.io, we partner with clients to optimize commercial productivity, in other words, growth and efficiency, by focusing on what we call key accounts. For those large enterprises that spend the most.
So do businesses sometimes try and attend to everybody's needs and they sort of take their eye off the big ball?
Well, yeah, it's really a fascinating sort of observation I've made over the years, but for most businesses, 20% of accounts drive 80% of revenue and profit, and usually it's more extreme than that. But there's no system to navigate these massive companies, so I set out to build one.
So then what do you do for a client? I mean, they can just look up billing. How do you identify them, and what do you advise companies to do?
Well, there's really a, I'll start with sort of a story about the where the original sales model sort of got invented. But back in the 1800s, National Cash Register invented the entire premise of territories, quotas, commissions, and scripted pitches. That's almost 150 years ago. And think of all the changes that have occurred since then. COVID's only accelerated what was already happening with digital disruption, which really challenged its original sales model years ago. So to really understand what customers need now in today's digital age, it requires a much deeper situational awareness across many people involved in making business decisions with a constantly changing set of challenges to react to. And that's particularly prevalent in large, expansive enterprises that spend the most commercially with companies. So, you know, Gartner predicts that 80% of B2B interactions will be in digital channels by 2025. You know, businesses just have to modernize to be able to operate and interface digitally with key accounts that spend the most with their business.
Gartner is a consulting firm, and I did see a little bit about their report. What are you and they saying about the new world? We're either still in a pandemic or post-pandemic. Has this attention to these key accounts changed, or will there be different mechanics for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, they've written research that's just recently come out that lays out three main pillars that are critical to sort of a new era of commercial productivity. One, much greater situational awareness, which is a constantly changing thing about customer relationships, managing an extensive set of stakeholders involved in decision making. You have to help each one of them individually from their own perspective, and overcoming internal silos to orchestrate value. And we provide a platform that supports these new requirements. One of the key things that they point out is that you have 95% of chief sales officers expecting higher growth from key accounts, but only 68% of key account managers say their organizational approach is effective. So we aim to make key account growth systematic because key accounts offer the greatest growth potential, and you just can't afford to lose them.
So the advice you give to these companies sounds internal, right? Rather than this B to that B, it's more, hey, team B needs to get its act together. They need to figure out a more efficient strategy.
Yeah, a lot of it's about working backwards from customers.
Yeah.
You know, companies are used to pitching products. Many organizations have grown throughout the years through massive amounts of acquisitions. There's a huge amount of products. We call this sort of condition productitis, which is you have so many products and such a complex business that you're pushing at your customers, you look like 150 different companies to them. So when you work backwards from customers, you're really aligned to meet their needs. And in today's environment, that's more critical than ever.
I think some of us consumers experience that. You say, why is this product not as good as it used to be? Or why hasn't it changed? Or why isn't it improving? Or if some reason you find yourself dissatisfied with something that a company is producing and you wonder why they don't tend to it, it may be because they have productitis, which is a new phrase
exactly.
For us today. It's interesting work. It's Dale Irwin, the founder and CEO of Polaris.io. You can visit Polaris.io.com. Somebody is paying attention to that. Good luck to you, and it's nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us today, Dave.
Thank you, John.